brought to you by bedroombattlefield.com. This is the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Ben, welcome to the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. Let's talk Blood Bowl. How are you doing this evening?
Not bad at all, man. Thank you ever so much for having me. We did have a brief chat a minute ago, and I kind of pointed out that I am very and always happy to talk Blood Bowl for as long as you want. So, very happy to be here, man.
Yeah, funnily enough, like once I'd kind of took this like notion to get into Blood Bowl and got Blood Bowl, and of course, as you do as a podcaster, you look for podcasts about it. So you guys came up and I've been listening through a lot of back episodes. Then funnily enough, one of the listeners to my show, that there are a small handful, had got in touch to say, oh, you should get Ben at the Bonehead podcast on. And I said, well, that's already in motion. So
yeah, that's wicked.
Yeah. So, popular demand. We could call that one person. We could call that popular demand, can't we? So, Blood Bowl. Just to give you a brief background. Like, I had Blood Bowl as a kid. So we're talking mid-90s. So I don't really know. I know it wasn't the first Blood Bowl, but it was certainly an earlier iteration. It was the Orcs and Human team.
Yeah, I went back and I had a look at some of your content after we had a bit of a chat, and I did smile to myself earlier because I was like, I reckon you're from the same era as me. I reckon you're from like the Red White Dwarf era, like mid-90s Warhammer, like Warhammer 4th to 5th edition fantasy, like that was kind of the vibe. You know, I could tell how much you loved the unboxings, you see, so I kind of thought.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was, that would have been the 3rd edition then. That was the one with like the big with Morg, the ogre on the front cover, the blue box with the human blitzers and stuff. Yeah, it was a cracking box set. That was when it started changing over to the custom block dice. Everything before then was quite honestly quite rubbish as far as the gameplay went, because the first edition was just Warhammer Fantasy Battle but with sports. Second edition made, I quite like it, but it was 2d6 instead of the block dice, and then they transitioned in the mid-90s with third edition and then the multiple reprints of it to the block dice. And that's basically the game is now. Like, they've just tweaked some of the special rules, made some of it less fun, made some of it way more fun. So, it's quite funny. As far as Blood Bowl is concerned, if you were playing it to the late 90s, you're probably not far away from being able to catch up and jump into Blood Bowl 2020, which is wicked, really.
Yeah, it's nuts to think about that, isn't it? Because you think about how much time has passed and like all the games that have come out in that time and all the games that exist in different iterations now and all the changes that I've made. So it says something about that game that they're able to still, like, you know, it's so popular these days and they didn't do that much to it with what you're saying.
I think that's kind of the Games Workshop secret to success for Blood Bowl, because you know this if you're from the same kind of Warhammer era as me. Like, they kind of just stopped looking after loads of their games about, you know, it was about the time I think I finished school. So my friends went off to uni, which was cool. So no one was playing games in my world anyway. But like the Fnatic magazine, all that kind of stuff just kind of stopped. And Games Workshop abandoned the specialist games. And then the Blood Bowl Rules Committee, which then I think was taken on by the NAF after that, basically just kept a copy of the rules PDF, all the teams and stuff going for, I guess, 10 to 15 years. And in that time, Games Workshop obviously weren't doing anything with it and not touching it. So the game just kind of brewed itself up being played by people who wanted to play it. And because, like, Blood Bowl's brilliant for the most part, because, like, not a huge amount changes. I think it's perfect for people who are, I don't mean casual gamers, but people who are, like, time poor. Like, the thing we see, like, all of our tournaments and stuff, people are like, yeah, I've not played for 6 months. And it's cool. It's fine. It's the same game. Like, I don't know how much you're involved with like 40K and stuff these days, but like everything changes so frequently that I love gaming, but that sounds miserable to me. Whereas Blood Bowl, like, it's very, very, very much the same. Most of the teams are very much the same and the tactics are very much the same. It's just like a safe space. Which makes it super accessible if you're starting out fresh or if you're coming back to it after a 25-year hiatus.
Yeah, yeah. Aye, I mean, that's it. Like, the appeal for me, but there was loads of different small appeals. Like, you know, I am a football fan. I know it's American football, but, you know, the idea of sports and the idea of getting a boxed game, you know, it's all self-contained. I just suddenly thought, you know, I don't know why I never got into this sooner. But I mean, so from what I could see, and I've not done much homework here, so like there was a 2016 iteration and then the 2021, which we've got now. So did they bring it out initially in 2016? Is that how it kind of worked?
Yeah, that was when they resurrected it, or should I say that's when Games Workshop reclaimed it, basically. And the rules they launched with in 2016 were basically, I would say, 97% the exact same as the community rules. So so they just kind of were like, okay, well, we'll retake this game. And then they dropped it in 2016 with a whole bunch of new teams and new models. So that, again, was orcs and humans. Not the best models, but not bad. I mean, Games Workshop, they do a lot of things well and a lot of things poorly, but they do make very good models. So they dropped the 2016 edition, and that kind of just rekindled the love for Blood Bowl everywhere. Blood Bowl 2 is basically, Blood Bowl 1 and Blood Bowl 2 were the same mechanics, so it all kind of gelled really well. So you could jump on to Blood Bowl 2 and play the same game as if you're playing the tabletop in 2016 when it dropped. So that got a massive upsurge of players. But then they did refresh it in 2020, as Games Workshop's you know, likes to do every 4 years or whatever. And they changed a few things. Like, 2020 is a little bit more complicated than the 2016 rules. Not by much. They introduced a passing stat and changed a few little rules. Like, it's really not that big of a deal, but it is different a little bit from 2016. Do you ever get involved with Necromunda much?
No, it's a game I don't think I've ever played. I mean, I know of it very well, but no, I don't think I've rolled a dice in Necromunda before.
Because when they resurrected Necromunda, they changed quite a bit of like the core mechanics, but with the Blood Bowl game, they didn't at all for 2016, and they just tried to make it a little deeper in 2020, which, I mean, hey, for those people who love Blood Bowl, that's wicked. There's more depth and more variety. And the people who are learning it, I mean, passing is great, but it really only comes up like three or four times a game. So it was not that impactful as a change. That was the only big change that really happened. So yeah, they brought it out with a great new box set in 2016, an even better box set in 2020 with a couple of brand new teams. There's a Black Orc team and the Human Nobility team. Again, basically humans and orcs, but a different style with much, much better models. And it's a hell of a box. You had some star players in there and everything. That's probably the best Games Workshop box they've done, was the 2020 one. 2016 was cracking, but the 2020 box, I think, is absolutely peak. You get full teams, big guys, and star players and everything. That's what's, I think, made it so easy to get into, is because, you know, you've already called it, right? I like the idea of being able to get a self-contained game, basically get a starter set, and with the starter set you get everything you need to play for two whole teams and like other stuff to add to it, which is not what you get in starter sets these days, is it? It tends to be a little bit bare bones.
And I did have the thought as well, like, again, I wouldn't care if I ended up playing an out-of-date game, but I was thinking 2016 to 20, you know, we're nearly that time again. Like, are they going to bring a new one out? I've just dropped 80 quid on this. Again, I wouldn't care, honestly. Like, I'm not a person who needs to play the up-to-date game, but...
So, all the stuff that was in the 2016 edition, this is the really good thing. So far, Games Workshop have not made any models redundant. So the human team from the 2016 edition, it's still alive now. I don't know if you can buy it anymore. I think I got an email the other week from somebody saying, hey, Ben, have you seen that you can't buy them anymore? What are they doing? And I was like, ooh, I don't know. But, you know, you can still play with the human team, and the rules are still valid. And when they update stuff, because Blood Bowl is quite a small, like, range of miniatures, they tend to just chuck it all out there with the rules. So when they did the 2020 edition, everything they'd released in 2016 had the rules for it right in the rule book, and the ones that didn't have the rules for the rule book were on the Games Workshop website in a PDF. So, like, literally, even the people who, like you and I, had teams back in the 90s, like, we're still waiting for High Elves and Tomb Kings. Like, if you've got your High Elves and Tomb Kings or your human team or whatever from the 1990s, it's still entirely usable. Like, literally, just the same models. They do the same stuff. Like, that's why it's so good. As to whether there's a new edition coming, look, we've been had this rumor now for almost 2 years. And who knows with Games Workshop? Like, I don't know. I kind of thought Adepticon would be a great time for them to announce something for Blood Bowl. And we got absolutely nothing. No team, no new edition. So absolutely God knows what's happening with a new edition. It doesn't really need it. But, I mean, new stuff is exciting. And, I it brings a lot of new players in when there's new releases. And that's wicked because more Blood Bowl is more better. That's what we always kind of say. And it's so fun because we normally run a lot of tournaments. So I've toned it down this year because I've got a little girl now and it makes things logistically more challenging. But like one of the great things is you go to a Blood Bowl tournament and it's one third people who really love it and play it all the time. One third people who haven't played it for 6 months, but it's there kind of like, I'm going to spend the weekend playing Blood Bowl and Blood Bowl doesn't change. So I know what I'm doing. And then there's one third new people who are like, oh yeah, like, yeah, this looks really cool. Like I love the idea of a troll throwing a touchdown. That's wicked. Like it's wildly unnecessary. So I'm on board. So when we get new releases, it gives the veterans something to complain about. It gives the intermediate players something to explore and it gives the new players something shiny to kind of latch onto. So, I'm always hopeful for new stuff for Blood Bowl. And whether they drop a new edition soon, I don't know. But all the teams that are in the boxes will still be eligible, you know, judging by what they've done before. And ultimately, like, rules for Blood Bowl are always available. Even if you don't want to buy the rule book, there's always a way to get rules for Games Workshop games if you don't want to buy them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking of rules, like I've been working my way through that big old rule book, reading the lore as well, which I thought it's very, they're very lighthearted about it all, which I kind of like that. They're not taking it too seriously.
That's so good.
Like the Games Workshop lore, I've always seen it as kind of a multiverse because I did when I was younger. You know, I did literally think, like, you know, when like Chaos are attacking the Empire and that, it's funny that they stopped to have a wee game of football, basically. And then, you know, when you're a bit older, you're like, right, I see what they're doing here. It's not really meant to be the same universe. But I kind of like as well the fact that they've just embraced the old world. They've got Chaos Dwarfs in there. They've even got Gnomes, which is like predates me in the 90s. So that is cool. Like, fair play to them.
It's funny. Like, I think if the lore was more out front, I think you'd get more people interested in Blood Bowl because I think it's like it's got that kind of Terry Pratchett nonsense vibe to it where they literally were like, yeah, Warhammer Fantasy, but instead of wars, they resolve things by playing Blood Bowl. And that's it. That's the one spark they need. And everything else just falls into line in the world of Blood Bowl. And it's just like you press the I believe button once, which is easy because you've just been smashing it because of elves, dragons and trolls. And you just press the I believe button and instead of war, you have gridiron. Like, and it just the lore and it's so tongue in cheek. And because it's born in the 80s, like Rogue Trader and stuff, like the tongue in cheek stuff is just it's just great. Like it's just it is really light and that's really beneficial.
So looking through the rules, like again, you know, when I played games in the 90s like Blood Bowl, you mentioned Warhammer 4th edition, like I had Space Marine, I had 40k. I think I almost never played anything properly. Like I probably got like movement and, you know, I rolled the correct amount of dice, but a lot of the supporting rules probably never made it to the table. But Blood Bowl was probably the game that I played most properly. So I probably still missed out a lot. So I had a couple of wee solo turns just to try and find out what I was doing again. I'd rather do that on my own than try and play someday and be figuring it out because suddenly an hour's passed and you've not even done a turn yet. So I was just trying to kind of see like, that's how that works. That's how that works. And
yeah, that's not a bad way of doing it. Now, if you want to learn Blood Bowl and for example, you don't have like a local group of gamers who already know how to play it. If you're kind of starting out by yourself, like obviously the Boner podcast, we've got loads of games you can watch that it's 97% accurate. We get rules wrong because we've been playing for a bunch of editions and some and FAQs and some stuff changes and sometimes we just having fun playing games with our friends and we just forget to check a thing. Like this is the which is, I think, a very good representation of how games play. Like you just mentioned it. Like as a kid, when you're younger, you just play a game. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think that's the best way. And Blood Bowl is quite, the rule set's for the most part pretty tight, pretty intuitive. Now, yeah, so the best ways to kind of learn it, like you doing it that way, you know, following the quick start guide, doing the step by step, just so you can kind of grok it yourself. Totally good. Getting hold of Blood Bowl 3, which is basically the PC. I think it's on other stuff as well. Like, it's the current rules, so you can play the tutorial, and you will basically learn how to play Blood Bowl by playing the tutorial. I don't know how much it is, but it's not. I don't think it's very expensive these days because the AI is awful. It's brilliant. So, like, that's a really good way to get in if you don't have somebody to bounce off of. But if you do have somebody, let's say you're a veteran Blood Bowl player, or you know some veteran Blood Bowl players. There's a smaller version of Blood Bowl called Blood Bowl Sevens. So like it's like the kill team, the 40K, right? But Blood Bowl Sevens is played with seven people on a smaller pitch. And it's got, like, you don't have rerolls so much. So it actually keeps the rules really simple. And it's an excellent way to learn because, yeah, if your first couple of turns can take an hour, Blood Bowl Sevens, if you know what you're doing, the game can take 40 minutes. So if you're learning an hour and a half, you can play a game of Blood Bowl Sevens as a new starter. And it's the same rules, that's just on a bigger pitch with more people when you actually go to play full 11s. Mm. Like, I wholeheartedly, it's my favorite way to play because, you know, I did the Warhammer thing, then I did the Magic the Gathering thing. So like the 45 to an hour game size is like the sweet spot for me.
Yeah.
Sevens hits that beautifully. So I prefer to play that. But if I'm teaching people, I always go with the sevens. Like, let's play some sevens. And within half an hour, they got the mechanics. The dice have already hurt them, and they've already hurt me with the dice, like, because that's how Blood Bowl rolls. And then everything you learn in sevens is just transferable to 11s. So you kind of, like, a first game of Blood Bowl, if you're playing a full-on game, and you've not really played Blood Bowl before, can take probably 3 to 4 hours. But you jump in with sevens, or you play a half as practice, then you're looking at an hour and a half, 2 hours, and then you get it. Mm-hmm. And once you get it, like, you're good to go. That's a good way of doing it, playing through by yourself. But there's a couple of ways to do it if you don't have a local group. If you do have a local group, get someone to play a game of sevens with you, and you'll be cooking in absolutely no time.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about sevens because I've heard it mentioned a few times on the podcast. So you do need another pitch then, a smaller pitch, right? You couldn't play sevens on the big pitch.
So they do sell sevens pitches, and you can get third-party sevens pitches. But the beautiful thing about the current Blood Bowl pitches is that they're double-sided, right? So with the aid of a Sharpie or some masking tape, you can just mark out your own sevens pitch on the back of your pitch.
Oh, yeah.
And you are... yeah, you're absolutely good to go. I've got my Skaven pitch, like the dwarf one I use the 11 side, and I just masking taped off the Skaven side as a sevens pitch, and you're that, like, that's it, then you're absolutely covered.
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly recommend that. I think it's a great way of doing it. If you can't pick up a sevens pitch, or you're not that fast, like, just turn your pitch over and tape off the areas you don't need.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and you're good to go.
Another wee thing you mentioned there, and I suppose I wanted to ask you about this too, like rerolls. So I've got a weird thing where I hate rerolls in any game. If, like, a homebrew Blood Bowl without rerolls, would I break the game or would I spoil the game?
You're describing sevens, man. Like, in sevens, rerolls are twice the price. So you can take them, but you get 600 gold pieces to build your team. Your rerolls are going to cost between like 100 and 140. So it's like almost a quarter of your team. So most teams just don't bother because you get one and it's not worth it. So most, it's like, I like sevens because it's quite immediate. You make the decisions of the dice will either succeed or not. Resource management in Blood Bowl, when it comes to rerolls, most teams you got about three. And I think it's a really important mechanic because it can just smooth out a bit of the, I rolled a one, so my game fell apart. Like, you have to roll a one two times in a go immediately for it to fall apart. And that totally happens. But it saves the feel bad. Like, that's the good thing. I'm with you, though. In war games and stuff, I hate rerolls. Like, my job is I'm an optimization and labor model manager. So like, I don't like stuff that takes a lot of additional time. I find it inefficient. And like 40K and stuff where you're like, right, okay, let's roll 40 dice and I get to re-roll. And it's like, cool, that's a lot of time. In Blood Bowl, your re-roll is you're going to spend eight times more time thinking about whether you want to use it or not than actually re-rolling it. So mm-hmm. I think they're very useful because they just stop the feel bad. Like if you know, it's like magic, you keep drawing lands, that's just crap. Imagine if you could just chuck a land away and draw another card, because then you'd be able to keep playing. And that's why rerolls are really useful in Blood Bowl, is because it allows you to keep playing the game instead of just being stuffed on the sidelines watching your opponent play the game, which, you know, I that's why I think it's so important. But yeah, for war games and stuff, rerolls, I'm also with you there. But what is it? What's it about rerolls you don't like the idea of when it comes to something like a skirmish game like Blood Bowl?
You know what? Like, one of my biggest problems with rerolls, and I think Blood Bowl maybe negates this by being very obvious that you have rerolls. Like, you've got that little dugout, I'm sure, haven't you? So
I
hate rerolls mainly in games because I forget about them. I think that's my biggest problem with them. So yeah.
No, they're such a precious resource. You don't forget about them.
Yeah.
You're like, I have only got two left and we've still got an hour to play. Like, oh, the dice are gonna hurt me. No, the other good thing is it's basically the only thing, the only resource, the only thing you have to think about that's not actually on the pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Almost every other damn thing you worry about or you're looking at from game information is on the pitch. Rerolls is about the only thing you have to manage that isn't actually a player on the ground, but like you said, it's just an inch to the right of it with a big number two by it. Like it's pretty low risk, and I think they're really reliable. I think they just keep you playing the game, because there's nothing worse than being alpha striked in a game of 40K or something, and you're just like, cool. glad I painted those guys, because now I just got to deploy them, I got to drive them here, and then I got to put them away again. That's fair. Forgetting stuff. That I mean, what kind of other war games do you play? Like, do you play any other, like, the core Games Workshop ones or anything?
No, not these days, no. So it's mainly many agnostic stuff like Frostgrave, Rangers of Shadowdeep, Hobgoblin.
You said Frostgrave there.
Are you a Frostgrave fan?
Look, I love the idea of Frostgrave, but you don't like rerolls. I have a mechanic that I cannot stomach, which is opposed rolls. Like, most of the time, like, Frostgrave is opposed D20 rolls, isn't it? Like, whoever rolls the highest wins. And I struggle with that as a mechanic.
Yeah.
That's the one I'm not a fan of.
Yeah, I find myself using opposed rolls quite a lot. Song of Blades and Heroes as well. So it's funny that you get the wee things, isn't it? Like,
yeah,
you know, it's just personal preference. Yeah.
Infinity's good because you've got opposed rolls, but with a target number. So it makes it, I've played that and I didn't mind it. But in the middle 2000s, me and a couple of guys who are on the channel sometimes, we did that dream thing of making a few games and doing the War Game Vault thing. We did a couple of shows actually and got the books printed and we did the stuff. And one of them made a pirate game, and it was opposed rolls. And I mean, it's been about 12 years and I still haven't forgiven him for using that mechanic in his game.
With the rules last night, so I gave it a wee spin just on my Todd, and I'd managed to kick off. I got my first rule wrong, which was kicking team kicked it into the receiving team's half, and then you do the deviation thing. So I did that,
yep.
And then the bounce, I misinterpreted the bounce. And I think I'd read where it said if it lands on a prone player or that, it keeps bouncing. But I interpreted that as the ball literally just keeps bouncing until it hits, you know, a player. So it was a way down in the corner of the pitch. And it bounces just one square. And I'm going, right, I said this to myself, this can't be right. It bounced like six times. And I was like, I'm going to read this again because I don't believe this is the rule. And of course it wasn't. So
yeah, no, that was one thing that wasn't great going from 2016, I think, to 2020. There's that one page that talks about scatter, bouncing, and deviating, And I'm like, cool, what a great way to use three synonyms. Like, it's like, yeah. Because there's a result on the kickoff table where if you roll for the kickoff, you roll weather, and you roll for weather, and it turns out the weather doesn't change. What happens is the ball then deviates before it bounces. And I think it took everybody like a year of playing this edition before they were like, hang about, that's not just an extra D8. That's three, that's D8, 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 then it lands and then you bounce it D8. So yes, I mean, that's just every game, they've got rules quirks where like the naming of things is less clear than you want. So I think you've fallen into the first of many, I'm sure, Blood Bowl classic rules traps.
Yeah, I was chasing info around the rule book a bit because it was like, you know, I wanted to learn to do this thing. And it was like, oh, well, you know, you have to pass this test. We'll talk about that on page 49. So I go to page 49. And it's like, yeah, of course, you need to do this other thing. We talk about that on 25. So I'm like, okay, I'll go to 25. So I was like, it was almost like the world's worst
choose your own adventure.
I was just going to say, it was like I was doing the five finger page mark, but it was just. I got to a point where I was like, what was the initial thing I was trying to do again? But I will pick it all up. I'm particularly slow at onboarding new rules. But once I grasp something, I kind of do quite well at it. But it does take me a wee while to load it into the old brain.
I will say, though, if anybody out there is listening, and definitely yourself, if you're learning Blood Bowl or you're playing Blood Bowl, we've got a good Discord for the Bonin podcast. It's a couple of thousand people, I think, in there now. So, and it's just a really friendly bunch. So if you get stuck with rules or anything, I think we've even got a channel about it. Just join the Discord. Everyone's pretty friendly and just be like, guys, help me out here. And you will have about 20 people be like, yeah, here we go. Probably me, probably Trips or one of the other guys. Always happy to help out with rules questions. Like it's one of the most, like what we get a lot of comments are like, how does this work, Ben? Like, how does this work? And so I spend a lot of my time in between boring meetings just being like, well, what you've done here is you've gone from page 49, but you chose left and went to page 72, and I'm afraid you died. Yeah. But no, if anyone out there is interested in Blood Bowl, you can join our Discord and you will be met with many people who have been on the same journey as you and liked it so much that they stayed there.
Yeah, I do want to. I want to kind of ask you about like the content channels and stuff like that in a sec. I just have a couple more questions about the game itself. I'm not at the stage now where I could get heavily into the special abilities and tactics and that. But I got the gnome team. So I sold the humans and orcs to my brother-in-law and his pal. I heard you talking about that on the show. That's the Spike magazine. So they were in there, I'd heard.
Yeah, so good.
So I've got the gnomes and I'm painting them up just now. So that's going to be my team. But when I lined them up on the pitch, all I really knew was to put three on the scrimmage line. And, you know, you could get two wingers in the wide zones. But apart from that, I didn't really know where to put anyone else. So I don't know if there's like classic formations or whatever.
Yeah, there's a couple of things. So we've got plenty of videos on our channel about setups, but there are some like really basic setups for offense and defense that you can do. And like on defense, one of them is called you've got basically two. There's like the chevron, which is you deploy in a line and you kind of angle your players so that there's lots of squares in the way so no one can kind of run through. It ends up looking like one of those 2p machines. You drop a coin in from the top and it bounces around. That's kind of how that looks. And you've got the anchor, where you kind of put your three guys on the line and just kind of accept that they're dead. And then you can kind of put the rest of your more important players behind, a little bit further back, who tend to be safe except for the blitz. But what I will say is the Spike magazines, I really like them. They're full of fluff. You get the rules, but you get the rules in the box anyway. But there's always one little page in them with setups specifically for that team. Now, normally we do a team setup video where we go through loads of different stuff. I don't think I ever got around to doing it with names. I think we got too carried away playing. But the actual Spike magazines, they've got set up like example setups, one for offense and one for defense. So it kind of gives you some advice as to how to put your team and where to put your team. But when it comes to gnomes, come on, the foxes are there to catch the ball, run off with it super fast. You've got the Beastmasters who've got Guard, which basically gives all of their friends plus one strength around them. They're very good. So if you're gonna get hit first. Put the rubbish guys and the trees, if you've got a couple of trees, on the line, because trees are almost invincible because they're super strong, super tough. And then if you're attacking, then you can bring up the guard, the guys with guard, the beast masters, the one with the badger and the goose, because they can just help each other and you kind of combo out and make a lot of really strong blocks on the line. Even though the rest of your team is kind of held together by wishes, like, you will get a good few attacks with gnomes. I love gnomes. I think they're challenging. I think they're good. I love the foxes. But you got to have a couple of trees, though. Otherwise, you're just going to get turned into dust.
I did add a couple of trees, but I went old school. I've got a couple of old, like, lead ones that I brought in.
The Durthu.
No, these are like third party, so I don't even know where I got them. But I'd to be honest, like, I'm not a modern miniature builder, if you like. So when I got all these sprues, like the gnomes, I found them an absolute nightmare to build. Like, it was like a shoulder connects to an arm, connects to a hand, and it was driving me mad. So
the gnome team is like, the models are beautiful. Like, it's one of the nicest teams Games Workshop have done. But I don't understand why something that small needs to be 6, 7, 8 pieces.
Yeah, like, you had to glue their faces to their heads. It was just mental. Yeah. The two illusionists were, like, hands down the hardest models I've ever had to put together. And they're tiny, like you say. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So
yeah, I have a confession. I've never built a gnome. They released on the day we were running a tournament. So when we got hold of them, Ben, who's the other Ben on the show, is a commission painter, him and Milton were helping me run the tournament. They got the box of gnomes and they sat there and they built them together. Then Ben took them home and painted them up so that we could play on the Monday on the channel. Mm. So I I saw them doing it and I thought to myself, no, not this time.
Yeah, and one of the reasons I got them was because I was thinking, I can't be arsed with all this sprue clipping. Like, the gnomes are small, they'll be fine. How wrong I was. Like, because I looked at that, the necromantic horror, like the sort of Halloween themed team, and I thought, I bet that comes in 10 million bits. So that's why I didn't get that one. But ironically,
you know,
I was maybe
necro
wrong.
Necro aren't so bad. But one thing I will say about Blood Bowl is Games Workshop don't let people play it in their shops.
Mm-hmm.
They only run 3 or 4 tournaments a year, like, around the world. So every other Blood Bowl tournament, and there are like loads and loads and loads happening all the time, they're run by shops, they're run by people who are running TOs. So there's none of this like anti-third party stuff.
Yeah.
So Blood Bowl is, and where, like, obviously Games Workshop stopped supporting it for 10 years, the market got flooded with great third-party stuff. So, like, you know, sounds like you're into your mini agnostic stuff at the moment, which is wicked. And Blood Bowl is borderline minis agnostic, because if you're playing in a league, if you're playing in a tournament, as long as you can tell what the model's supposed to be, like, you are golden. You can use whatever. There's always people using cool teams at our tournaments. Like, there might be like a Pokemon team here. Someone else may have done like something else that's just, but because you can, like, get my orcs from here, the elves from here, like, there's so many to choose from, that it's a really golden era. And especially with like 3D printing's taken off in Blood Bowl over the last sort of 3-4 years as well. So if you want X team, there's going to be about 3 or 4 really good 3D printed ones and 2 or 3 really good third party ones to pick from. Because the models are pretty easy to tell apart. Like, you can use whatever and you can mix and match. So our gnome team is a Games Workshop gnome team, but the trees are 3D prints from Ugni because we prefer the trees. Like,
yeah.
And that's it. Like, that's kind of the brilliant thing about Blood Bowl, especially because, like, most teams have got like a big guy or 2 big guys. So, like, for Norse or vampires, like, you buy the Games Workshop Norse team, you buy the Games Workshop vampire team, and then you're like, cool, I need to find a model to be the big guy. I need to go and find a Yeti or something that looks like a Yeti. Maybe an old Warhammer Gorger would be cool. Or that's the really wicked thing about it. And you see it in all the teams in Blood Bowl that people just run, and especially on the channel. Like, we don't have very many pure Games Workshop teams, just because we can kind of, you can pick and choose. And unless you're going to Games Workshop HQ, you're like, it is never going to cause you a problem, which means we're spoiled for choice. Now, it doesn't mean you end up with one team, though. Normally, it means you end up with, like, I think I've got, like, six different Skaven teams.
Yeah.
But then I have a Skaven problem, so what can you do?
A Skaven problem. Last night, so I needed a team to field against the gnomes, so I got a lot of old miniatures from my collection, like stuff designed for like dungeon bashes and that. And for the starting turn, I just mirrored the stats of the gnomes. But then I use like AI a lot for my work. So I typed into ChatGPT. I was like, these are the 11 models. Like I even gave it a wee photo. I was like, go and make me a Blood Bowl roster with these guys. And it did. And it was really like, I said it's to play the gnome team. So it gave me all these stats and everything. It even gave me names for the guys. So I had ready-made team to play. But then, of course, I got the bounce wrong and they ended up just watching a ball bouncing for half an hour.
I'm glad you're a ChatGPT guy, not a Gemini guy.
No, I've never used that one. No. Claude as well. I've used that, but...
We use Google Suite at work and they've like, oh, there's now Gemini and it's just awful.
The one that when I go into my Gmail, it's like, I could write this email for you. And I'm like, well, I mean, you can't, can you? Because you've no idea what I'm going to say. So
No. It's the only way a PC could write something that looks like it was written with a crayon. Yeah, not impressed with Gemini. ChatGPT, though, is unnaturally good.
Yeah,
Anyway. Sorry, I'm a geek in all things, so this is kind of...
Well, one more question about like the workings of Blood Bowl itself is just, do you always activate every player when it's your turn?
No. So I'll give you a tip. The best way to play really good Blood Bowl, is to do significantly less than your opponent. Because if you try and make a dodge, if you try and make a block, it can go wrong. Your turn can go over. It can end. Like when it comes to playing Blood Bowl, you move the people you want to move, you need to move. If you don't need to move a guy, or if moving them means you're going to have to take a risk of a dodge roll, so you've got to balance whether or not it's worth it. Because I think the best thing you can think when you're playing Blood Bowl, if you're trying to win or just, put up a good test for your opponent, which I think is the best way to think about it, is like, right, I'm going to give you a challenge here, is to force them to roll the dice instead. So if you're like, right, I can dodge away and I need a 3+. Okay, so if I roll a 1 or a 2, my turn ends, my guy is hurt. If I leave him there, my opponent is going to block me. They've got one dice. They don't have blocks. So they're looking for a power star, so a 5 or a 6 on a dice for me to get hurt. So it's a third for me to get hurt if I let you roll, or a third if I roll. But also if you roll, there's a third chance that you're going to get hurt. So in most cases, you can kind of think about it and be like, right, okay, I can take the risk because if it works, I've got the benefit of choosing where my guys go. But often it's not a bad thing to be like, right, do you know what? I'm going to let you roll it. And if you ever catch any of Monday Night Blood Bowls, you'll hear the guys do it every now and again. They'll be like, do you know what? I'm going to let you roll this. Like, you may have better odds than me, but you take the risk then. Mm-hmm. So you don't have to activate everybody. I don't know how clearly that's actually written in the rules, but like, you don't have to activate. If you're happy with where a guy is, great. If you don't have to fight, if you don't want to fight, you can just leave them standing next to them. Yeah, they're going to get punched. But like I said, your opponent can roll that skull. And I think it's definitely worth doing. It depends. Depends what kind of player you are. If you're bloodthirsty, then you're going to take all the blocks you can. If you play like me with Skaven, you're just going to dodge with everybody just to try and score as many touchdowns as you can. But, if you're... It's never a bad thing to think to yourself, do I want to roll this or do I want to make you roll this? Mm-hmm. And that's the key thing for Blood Bowl. I'm not very good at that because I'm like, let's make stuff happen. Let's build a story.
Yeah.
And when it comes to my Skaven team, it normally ends up 4-0, 4-1, one way or the other. So, and I'd rather play a game that ends up with like 5 touchdowns, even if they're not mine, because it's just, that's just more interesting that way. But that's the beautiful thing about Blood Bowl is you can play big and brash, or you can play small and careful. It's your choice.
In a recent chat with Ronnie Renton of Mantic, we talked about licensed games such as Halo, The Walking Dead, and Worms. And that's prompted our question of the month for April, which is, What classic, popular, or even obscure IPs would you most like to see adapted into a miniatures game? Get your voice clip in over at bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail, and I need them in before Sunday the 27th of April. That's bedroombattlefields.com/voicemail. And now back to the show. So the podcast then, like the content channel, you know, all the content that you're putting out around Blood Bowl, like what was the origin story there?
Well, me and a friend, Rich, we were like, let's make a podcast. We had a local league, and we thought to ourselves, it'd be great fun to have a chat and talk about Blood Bowl and talk about some of the stuff that we're enjoying and we're doing. And that started back in 2018, I think, probably. Maybe 2008? Yeah, 2018, I think. And then I think, you know, the classic thing of like COVID hit. So I started doing the stuff on the YouTube instead, and it just went from there. I've always wanted to film games. Like that was always my personal stretch goal, like, because it's fun and I want to share games, and that's just cool. I get to play with tech, get to have a laugh with my friends, and it's been really good. So that's what I was always shooting for. But like, it started off as a podcast, talking with a friend about Blood Bowl and sharing it with other people. Then it got to like the new edition came out, and I did the classic talking head content, because, you know, most of it was happening like during like, I think, COVID or something like that. And it was like, well, I can almost have a conversation because I can put down my thoughts and then I can let the people in the comments join in and let me know what they see different, or what they approve or what they don't approve, or what I'm missing. And it's kind of like a good way to have an asymmetric conversation with people. And that's how it started. And that's what I've always enjoyed from it, is it's genuinely like talking about Blood Bowl or other war games, and having an asymmetric conversation via the art of video. And I've always liked this kind of content. Like, this is what I will watch. Like, if I have to drive to Bracknell for work or whatever, I'll put YouTube Premium on. I'll listen to somebody talk about something they're interested in, and I'm like, oh yeah, I like this. So I was like, I'm sure there are people out there that would like to be like, oh, I've got half an hour, I like Blood Bowl, well, that's interesting, I'll listen to that, that's quite cool. And that's kind of where, that's the content I've always wanted to make. So it kind of, yeah, started as a podcast, turned into talking heads, and eventually we got to the point where we could do the videos. And then, yeah, so that's kind of the trajectory of how the podcast went. I suppose it's more of a YouTube channel now than a podcast, but we do a podcast every 2 weeks talking about Blood Bowl. I wouldn't miss it for the world.
It sounds like it's obviously something that, you know, you're doing for your own creative outlet, but a great byproduct of that is, of course, a great community, you know, a big community being built around that. How has that kind of been for you?
I love our crew. Like, they are amazing. I've got to say, though, Blood Bowl, like, the community in Blood Bowl is always, like, I know every game kind of says, oh, I do this for the community, but actually, like, Blood Bowl is just the sweetest group of people. Like, every tournament you go to, generally, like, every conversation you ever have with anyone about Blood Bowl is like, it's just really cool. Like, I go into a tournament or a league, you rock up and you don't know anybody, and it doesn't matter. Like, you find somebody who's got a Blood Bowl team or is standing near a Blood Bowl team, and you say, all right, mate, what are you running then? And they're like, oh, I'm running Lizards and I'm doing this. And by the way, I'm Steve. And you end up having a conversation. And by the end of the day, you've made like 20 friends. You've shared a miserable experience because of your dice with everybody else, because that's just how war games go. And it's really good. So the tournament community is great. Like, the online community, as far as any online community goes, is pretty great. All the people who join our Discord are really, really, really wonderful. And they're often like our Patreons or YouTube members, and we've had a bunch of them on the show or filmed games with them and stuff, like, or they see them at tournaments. We're not hyper competitive. That's not what we want to do. We've all been there and done that, right? This is about having a great time with people and building stories together. So, like, everything we do is to learn to get as good as you want to get, but not pushing it any further than that. Not pushing it to the point where it's not fun. You want to play the game and you want to give your opponent a game, but you're not a professional, so don't worry about it. Like, so, and that's kind of the vibe for the podcast. And the thing with Blood Bowl is most people pretty interested in being like, what else? What can we homebrew? Like, what custom rules can we come up with? What new teams can we do? And that's where Blood Bowl shines, is because it's a really safe, like, core game, because the mechanics are pretty tight. It's pretty straightforward for the most part, which means you can have your own fun by adding stuff to it. And that's, again, another bit where the community is tends to be really creative. So it's just a really great place to hang out, actually. I do love doing our streams and chatting with the guys, or hanging out in Discord with them. I've had very few bad interactions with people in the world of Blood Bowl, which is fantastic. Like, I count myself very lucky in that.
Not like me with my three listeners. I just argue with them all the time. You mentioned storytelling a few times as it pertains to Blood Bowl. Have you got any particular Blood Bowl players that you created that have gone on to become the stuff of legend?
Oh, hell yeah, man. This is where the guys from the teams that we run in the Bonehead Championship stuff, they come alive, which is just the best thing about Blood Bowl. So currently, our Norse team has got a Yeti called Cuddles, with the sub tag created by the viewers. Cuddles, he who stands, because Cuddles is the best at standing, because he's got a rule that when he does something, you have to roll a 2+, and he's just like rolls a 1 frequently, and he just stands there like being a pacifist. And we had him on a 1 series, and he just was this soft lump, and we carried him over into 7s, and then he went on a murderous rampage. So Cuddles was all this, so it became this big thing in chat, like, what would Cuddles do? And we went to the tournament in February, and a couple of the lads turned up with a what would Cuddles do t-shirt, which was absolutely wicked. We got that, we got Grot Brady, one of our goblins, like, we've got a few of the gnome team are pretty famous now as well. We've got Girth and Trude, the tree, and Trash and Panda, the foxes. Like, this is the wicked thing about Blood Bowl, is you start brewing up these stories, and these guys build their own character. And it can get pretty messy sometimes, because we had Grot Brady, who is number 12, a star goblin on the Black Orc team. And because we kind of rotate teams, because we like to share them around, like, the people who come on and play the games, like, people would just try and get Grot Brady killed, and it was like a big thing in chat with, like, kill Grot Brady, and it's the closest thing you can get to sports without having to pay £8,000 to Sky, which is wicked. So it doesn't take long for players to get character in Blood Bowl just by doing great things or failing to do things, especially when you're hanging out with friends. We even had one snotling called Trumpets, because he has a trumpet. And Brute Fun, when he sculpted, the Brute Fun's a third-party manufacturer for Blood Bowl, sculpted a snotling with a trumpet just so he could be Trumpets, which is just, like, it's just so wicked. Like, that's where Blood Bowl comes in. It plays great in tournaments, but it's League where it starts really, really, really getting something special. And that's what we love doing when we play our games every week, is you can see the players get better. You learn their names, they become a thing, and that's the best kind of storytelling.
Yeah, that really appeals to me, because I'm a big player of skirmish games. And, you know, there's been a lot of characters in the skirmish games that I've played that have gone on to have, like, their wee stories and that. So looking forward to sort of having the same experiences with Blood Bowl. So I've, with my gnome team, I've been painting them up blue and yellow, called them Wimble Gnome, after Wimbledon. And I've got Vinny Gnomes and the two tree men, Laurie Branches and Efan Ek Oak.
You're just setting them up for greatness there. Because if they succeed, makes sense. If they fail, it's even more beautiful. Like, yeah. It's just wicked.
So how many times a week or a month do you tend to get a game of Blood Bowl?
So I've got a little baby girl now. She's 15 months old. So I play a little bit less than I used to. But we on the channel, we play a game every Monday night. So it's kind of something we've, me and the guys have kind of ring fenced. Like, we live stream it 8 o'clock on a Monday, and they put it in their calendars. All the family knows, like, this is like my games night is a Monday night, and I'm going to go play Blood Bowl at Ben's, and we're going to stream, and it's going to be great. So I get to partake in one game of Blood Bowl a week. And then I don't get to play as often as I would like anymore because my hobby time has shrunk a bit. But, like, you know, Blood Bowl 3 is always there. But so at the moment, yeah, not as much as I'd like. But before Libby, I'd play probably 5-6 games on tabletop a month. Like, we used to have a local league. And we'd play once a week, and then I'd probably run a tournament or film videos. So yeah, like on tabletop, you know, I used to, yeah, that would be where I want. But at the moment, I'm quite happy DMing by being the cameraman and watching the teams advance and watching the players make the plays. Although the other week I did get to film a game with Milton and it was wicked. I got to run the Chaos Dwarves against the undead and it was great to be playing again and filming at the same time. So yeah, I mean, you know, quite a bit of Blood Bowl, I guess. Not as much as I'd like, but that just means I like it, I think.
Yeah, I mean, one game a week, well, a 15-month-year-old, I was going to say. A 15-month-old is impressive. But that's great. Like, how long does a game typically take you? You know, you guys obviously know the rules inside out, so.
So I can tell you, right, the guys knows the rules pretty well, but when we have a live stream, we obviously have a chat with chat at the same time. And most of our live stream games are about 2.25 hours. When they're cut down a little bit, it's just under 2 hours. So, you know, that's probably what you'd be expecting. If you're going to a club and playing in a league, you'd want to budget 3 hours for your game. You want to budget the 15 minutes for hello. You want to budget playing the game. You need to budget the 15 minutes at the end of the game to do your stat ups and your experience points and stuff like that, because that's the main reason you play, right? That's when your players start developing. That's the bit you want. And then up, you know, 2 hours, 2.5 hours to play. So for a club night, yeah, we used to rock up at 7:30 and most people would be done by 10. So yeah, that's pretty solid. And when it comes to tournaments, we give everyone 2 hours 15 to play, and we very rarely have anything like longer than that. So, but like you said, you get into knowing the game a bit better. But one thing I brutally do to my players is we have at least 6 to 8 teams live in the league, and we rotate the teams. So it's not like every week they play the same team. It's every week they sit down and they're like, okay, right, I'm playing Norse this week. Right, okay. And it's really good to see that. I that's my personal preference. I like playing that way because it gives you more mental challenges on the board. It's a different puzzle. But it's also fun to see, because it means every week you've got somebody new learning a team in a different way than the week before. So if you're interested in joining up and starting to watch Norse, then actually we've got a couple of series where we run Norse, and we've probably had 3 or 4 different people run the Norse team as it's developing across those seasons. So you can kind of watch it and learn what they do. And then by sort of game 3, you start to go, yeah, I wouldn't have done that. Oh, I wouldn't have done that. And you start to kind of get that point of like conscious competence where you're like, I know what they did wrong there. And it's like a cool learning curve, and it's good to keep the players fresh. So yeah, I mean, your game, 2 to 3 hours. Like, if we can live stream one and be done in 2.5 hours, then most people playing casually 2.5 hours, I think, is perfectly fine.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Obviously, you don't get much time at the moment, but if you ever get the chance to play games other than Blood Bowl, what are you typically looking to get on the table?
Oh, dude, I am delving into one-page rules at the moment. So, absolutely love. I'm a big fan of miniature agnostic stuff as well, but I'm a proper war gamer. Like, I grew up playing all the stuff, and very much like you described, thinking I was playing all the stuff as to whether I got it right or not, don't know, but I enjoyed it and it was fun. But yeah, Blood Bowl is primary, but we're currently working on a one-page rules Grimdark Future expansion campaign. We started organizing it this week, actually. I printed 2 little forces for the guys the last couple of days. So yeah, one-page rules is probably my go-to for war games. It's the first time in such a long time I've just wanted to play a game. Like, Blood Bowl's wicked. I always want to play it, but like Warhammer, Yes, a lot of work. Old school fantasy wasn't that much work because most of the rules were on the pitch, whereas like Age of Sigmar and 40K, they introduced so much stuff outside of the game that playing the game became just, I couldn't put my mind together to do it. So all the cool stuff with guns and tanks and monsters just kind of sat away. And then we came across one-page rules. Played a couple of games, played a couple of war games, right, with models, and we were like, this is great. Like, we should do this more often. So I'm very much delving into one-page rules at the moment. And we intend to be filming some games with it as well, which is very cool. But you know, that's my primary. I would say we've got Epic Warpath coming out from Mantic soon. Very interested in that. Like, back that on Kickstarter, small scale sci-fi. I'm one of those small scale and spaceship weirdos that I'm like, ooh, that looks different. I you know, so that's kind of my gaming at the moment. Is one page rules, and then I'm always keeping an eye on what Mantic are doing because I really like them as a company. So. I'm probably missing some other stuff, but yeah. I mean, I'd love to play some Necromunda, but again, it's quite a rules-dense game.
Yeah.
And there's like 20 books, but yeah. Necromundas, there's a special thing because I'm from the 90s. Well, I'm technically from the 80s, but my wargaming was in the 90s, right? Yeah. So I grew up seeing all the buildings and there was the best box set of all time. But I think that's one of those things where it's like, the idea is probably better than the reality in that one.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, dude?
I don't play as much as I would like, but I managed to get solo games in, and you know, maybe every other month I'll be able to play with a human, which is always nice. I could do better, but I just you know, again, I've got a 3-year-old. I know you've got an even younger one, but
you've got to choose your battles, right? You've got to choose your investments.
I was just going to say, I'm a very early bed person. Like, I'm a total morning person. So, like, I'm up at 5 a.m, always have been. So I just can't, like, I could never play a game to 10 at night. I would fail completely to engage with it. So,
guess until we had Libby, I was an early morning person and a late night person. And yeah. I got loads done. It was wicked. I'd get up, I'd go to work, I'd be done, I'd come home, I'd chill out, then I'd go play games, and now it's very much a case of like, I get up when she's bloody ready, and then we go to bed as early as we can because we don't know how soon she's going to wake up.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we've got this routine. So Tiff always gets a bit aggy on a Monday night when I come to bed at like 11 because she's like, we should have been in bed at least an hour ago. And I'm like, yeah, it's fine. Like, you know, I've been playing Blood Bowl. But on solo gaming, one page rules, like, they've got solo rules in there. That was another thing that snagged me, because I'm like, This is interesting. So you're telling me I can take my high elves from the 90s and I can take my goblins from the 90s and I can just set them up and challenge myself using the models that I love. And it's really interesting. So when we did the one-page rule skirmish stuff, the lads got together, we had a day of it. We introduced some NPCs using the solo co-op rules. And the games where we had the NPCs, like we had some zombies and we had some gangers running around, those games were awesome because you were playing against, it was PvPvE basically, and I am just absolutely smitten. That was the thing that was like, okay, this is a game I want to play, like, and I can spend my time brewing up the rosters, and you know, I can play some solo stuff. So I'm always interested by solo games because it's any excuse to get your models, anything that gets you painting or playing or thinking about painting or playing, I think is positive for people's well-being. So like Blood Bowl's cracking for that, because I'm like, cool, what color, if you had an orc team, would you want your orc team to be, and what would they be called? And then you'd go away and you'd look at some orc teams and be like, oh, I would be interested to get that. Yeah, I could call them this, and that would be quite fun, and how would I paint them? And that's enough. Like, welcome to Blood Bowl. You're now a Blood Bowl player. You may not have any teams, but you in your mind, you're like, I'd really love a blue and yellow orc theme, that orc team. That'd be interesting. And that's the thing, like, when you got the solo or co-op games, you kind of start thinking, no, it'd be really cool to run this force, and I could do this as like the enemy force, and that'd be really interesting. And then I could rotate them, and I could maybe do a campaign, and we could see how they develop. And And that's you're already hobbying at that point. Even if you're, you know, in bed at 7:30 p.m. after watching Emmerdale or whatever, you start thinking your campaign rules. That's hobby. That's hobby. I love that.
Do you get much painting done on a week?
Painting. So Tiff and I have instituted hobby night on a Sunday because the NFL went away. So it left me with a big empty hole in my heart. So I'm quite lucky in my little studio. I've got my airbrush desk there. So I can airbrush and prime. And then I've got this excellent life hack, which is cake trays, like cake stands, but you get the square ones that are like £5 for three. And I've just got like three of them out with, I've got some Space Marines there or whatever, and some Wood Elves there. And then when Tiff and I hang out, she's going to read a book or play Animal Crossing or something. I'll be like, do I want to paint Blood Bowl? Do I want to paint the Wood Elves? What do I want to do? And I'll just grab my little cake tray with the paints on that I was using. I'll take it in the lounge and I'll sit next to her and I'll just paint. And it's awesome because that means that I don't, like, I kind of get a little choice, but I don't have to put everything away and put everything out and think about, because I have this massive issue last year where if I had the opportunity to paint for 2 hours, I would spend 2 hours thinking about what I wanted to paint, and then I wouldn't actually paint anything. Now, like, I'm just like, right, so what have I got at the moment? I've got Wood Elves from One Page Rules there. I've got Highland Minis Skaven there, and I should have a Blood Bowl team there, but I haven't set it up yet. That's my three projects at the moment. So I don't get a huge amount of painting in, but I tend to be the kind of person that paints to a purpose. So the Friday night before a tournament, or more often with me is the, no, we're filming on Saturday and I haven't painted my team yet. I haven't painted this team yet. I haven't painted this army yet. That's when I will get painting. But I can say that my skirmish force that I'm planning to be filming with is in fact fully painted for One Page Rules and over there on the table. So I painted and completed a thing, which is very good. I'm already ahead of last year.
Aye, that barrier to entry is really important, isn't it? Like, it's the same with, like, I'm talking about playing solo games, and I'm lucky enough, I've got a wee bit of space on the table in my office just to keep a game set up at all times. So it is a case that, like, at lunchtime before I go out a walk, I could literally just play a turn and I don't have to set anything up or that. It's already set up. So to have that luxury, it just means, like, it's not like, you know, thinking, should I set a game up? Well, what game am I going to set up? What miniatures will I use? And by that time, you know, the moment's passed, isn't it?
So you can just jump straight into the flow. I love that. I think that's great. I've always got something set up on the table behind me, but it's not always something useful. It's normally, obviously, a Blood Bowl game left over from the Monday night. But I was doing some filming today, so I've got my little One Page Rules set up there.
Yeah. So are you creating some content around that as well then?
Yeah, got a video coming out in a minute, actually. They dropped a new Frontiers on my mini factory, a new little Kickstarter with like a faction book and a few extra hero character models. So they came out yesterday. So I read the book last night, printed the models overnight, printed them, primed them, prepped them, had a little photo shoot there with some desert terrain so that I could chuck in some B-roll on the video and edited that while Libby was having dinner. And I'll pop that live when I finish the thumbnail. And but the idea is they're releasing their version of like orcs, 40K orcs. But so what me and the local guys are going to do is like have an expansion campaign so that we can get to 2,000 points over the course of 6 months. So we've set like, so basically you're painting up 350 points a month. And so what I'm going to do is when they start releasing them, because they're a bit behind, the OPR guys are, I'm going to paint a little skirmish force and then we'll play a game with it. And then next month I'll paint 300 points of that release. So like every month, I get that kind of like, you're from the same era as me-ish. Do you remember the Dinosaur magazine?
No, Dinosaurs? I can't say I do. No.
Oh, it was wicked. Like every week you'd get a bit of a T-Rex and you build them together. And this is kind of emulating that. Is like every month they release some stuff. I'm going to build a little bit of it and we'll have a bit of a bigger game. So kind of working towards that. So that's kind of my little series to play OPR, to encourage hobby with my friends, and to actually make sure I do a bit of painting and try a bit of something. So that's something I'm really excited to do, as well as the Blood Bowl stuff at the moment, just because I guess that's the next barrier for me. Is like we film, I think we do quite good Blood Bowl. The content's never as good as you want it to be, ever. Like, the cameras are never as good, the lighting's never as good, the sound's never as good as you want it to be. But I think, like, okay, we can film a game pretty well and have a great time doing it. Now, can I film a 6x4 board? Can I bust out the realm of battle? Can we, like, at some point film a different type of game? And that's, like, something I've been chomping at the bit now for, I don't know, since before Libby was born. But obviously when you have a little sprog, it's just been one long day since she was born. So I'm giving myself a break on that. Please tell me it gets better as they hit three.
It does. It gets, I mean, it's always fun, but it gets very interesting. The mouth on my wee one now, she's like a 3-year-old, 13-year-old, I would say. How young are you thinking with your daughter until she's going to be rolling a bit of Blood Bowl dice?
As soon as Tiff will let me. at the moment, we're just trying to encourage Libby to stop picking up stuff from the ground and eating it, so we don't really let her in the studio.
Yeah.
but once she can get to that point, yeah, we're gonna have a child Blood Bowl prodigy. That's my goal.
I've got a nice wee routine that's been happening in the mornings. Like I say, I get up at like 5, and my wee girl gets up at 6:30. We've got a wee light, like a traffic light system. It changes. It's a Yotel player. So it's like, it's blue all night, and then at 6:30, it turns yellow. So she knows she could get up at that time.
So superb.
I've been like up, I maybe get like half an hour of my work done before she comes through to my wee room. And I built a dice tower, and I've got some polyhedral dice. So I was showing her this wee dice tower. And I said, and these are different dice. And, you know, she's rolled D6 with some of the wee Orchard toy games she's got. But I was showing her like a D20 and a D4. So every morning she's been coming through. Just like, can we play the... She calls it the dice game. It's not a game. We're just putting dice in a dice tower and like looking at what numbers comes up. And then I've been showing her some of my miniatures. Like, I've got a cabinet so she could see them, but I've actually started to let her hold the miniatures because she's very careful and she'll take on board, you know, what you're saying. So, you know, I'm showing her, like, you hold them by the base and stuff like that. So she's started to get this, you know, very, like, respectful,
amazing,
careful kind of, you know, she's holding it. I must have been confused now a wee bit because I'm saying you want to touch the base, you don't touch the miniature itself because it's painted. And I touched it and she's like, you don't have paint on your finger. And I was like, I don't mean it's wet paint, I mean it's painted. And then I was like, I'm not explaining this very well, but everything's taken very literally. But we've got, I don't know if you've ever heard the Korra Quest. So were you a Hero Quest kid?
Yeah.
So me and my wife went to Tabletop Scotland a couple of years ago and seen this game getting demoed, Korra Quest. And I thought, you know, that's got vibes of Hero Quest about it, but it looks like for pretty young children. So we picked up a box of that and interviewed the guy that made it, really nice guy, a couple of years ago. So I had him on the podcast just talking about he basically wrote the game with his daughter. I think it was during lockdown. So really nice story, and the game itself, I'm going to wait until we get into the winter, but I reckon my daughter's kind of ready to start rolling a bit of dice on that, so we'll see how that goes.
That is wicked. That's perfect.
Yeah, I think they say for 6-year-olds, but I reckon, you know, if your kid's switched on enough, I reckon they could be a bit younger. I know some of the guys in our Discord have been playing it with their kids who are younger than 6 as well, so hey, that'll be a wee winter one for us.
When I was 6, I was playing Warhammer incorrectly.
Yeah.
I was playing it, you know, it was fine. It was wicked. Yeah. No, that's wicked. I hope I get a chance to play that with her. I assumed the first kind of thing would be like a D&D thing with her and my wife and me just spending all of my dad points to make that happen. Because that the prospect of like gaming with your kid is awesome. Like, Yeah, I love that. I hope she's interested in it. Obviously, whatever she wants to do is totally cool. Like, I will support her. I will be that dad at the soccer games or whatever. But it would be much better to be the dad at the Blood Bowl tournament. I'm not going to lie.
So we've chatted for a wee while, but I could chat for like an hour and a bit more, but I don't want to keep you up all night.
I did. Well, especially if you got to get up soon.
I know. tell our three listeners where they should be checking out, where they find the podcast, the YouTube channel, et cetera, et cetera.
Thank you very much. Yeah, no, boneheadpodcast.com, all the links and stuff are on there, or just go to YouTube and look up the Bonehead Podcast. The Bonehead Podcast, the name is, there's a rule for ogres called Bonehead. That's why, and our mascot is an ogre with two heads. So that's where that comes from. It's not just because we're idiots at times. It's based on the rules. So yeah, find the Bonehead Podcast. We do weekly games. We do two weekly podcasts, and I will do probably three or four videos throughout the week, normally about Blood Bowl, sometimes about 3D printing, sometimes about, you know, whatever's happening in the wargame world, because I am definitely a full-on wargamer. Please come and join us, and by all means, if you're getting into Blood Bowl, I think we're a good place to start, but come and join the Discord and say hello to everybody, because you will get all the help you need, whether it's painting or playing or buying. Be careful when asking about buying, because you'll get sent loads of links to like 20 different awesome teams, and bad financial things can happen. But yeah, you might be happy doing it. But yeah, so come and join us in the Discord if you want to chat. Otherwise, yeah, we're on YouTube and Spotify and all that stuff as well.
Thanks very much for listening to this episode of the Tabletop Miniature Hobby Podcast. If you enjoy the show, then please do share it with someone else you think might enjoy it too. And be sure to check out our Discord community of like-minded hobbyists, which you could find at bedroombattlefields.com/Discord. It'd be great to see you in there.